Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the 18th day of July 2019, fast approaching the 50th anniversary of the first moon landing. I'm Derek Hunter, and this is the Daily Daily Caller Podcast. It is a Thursday. Ooh, yes, the weekend just around the corner. The anniversary, actually, of the Apollo moon landing is on Saturday, before my time, but I am going to be absorbed in the coverage. There's been a whole bunch of documentaries on the Smithsonian Channel and American Heroes Network, which kind of is like the History Channel until they start putting shows about people garbage picking and pawning their belongings. I don't know what happened to the History Channel. I remember when they used to do history. But there are other avenues out there. There have been great documentaries about the Apollo program out there. So recommend you check out those as best you can, especially this weekend. It is it's an amazing achievement in human history. It's astonishing now, especially considering the fact that in your pocket and probably listening to me on the device that you have, it has more computing power than they had on the ship they sent to the moon and successfully got back. It's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. So looking forward to that this weekend. Also today and tomorrow, the 18th, 19th, and then Monday, whatever date that is, quick math, 22nd, I will be hosting on WMAL, filling in for my friend Larry, who I don't know what he's doing, something. So from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, if you want to listen at WMAL.com or on any of those apps that are all over the place that have a million radio stations on them. You can listen live, call in, and complain in real time. You don't have to type it. But if you do want to type your complaints or whatever you got, send it to Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Keep entering to win the signed Kayleigh McEnany books. Two of them. I'll probably give away both of them next week. Not really sure. Have to play it by ear. I'm trying to hold up a bunch of, like, not a bunch, but like one copy of the books till like around Christmas time so that we can do a big one. Because I want to spend a lot of my personal money on postage or something at Christmas. But I like to do sort of year-end, here's a bunch of stuff kind of things. Got to find a way to do something live so people can answer questions to get a book. And then if you fail, you get nothing and like it. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for rating and reviewing on iTunes. The numbers jumped yesterday, so thank you for that. That is all because of you. And telling a friend, keep doing it, share on social media, all that good stuff. I work for your ears. It's really it. There's no pay involved in this yet. So your ears are my pay. And you get weird looks from the checkout person at Target when you try to pay with people's ears. I'm just assuming. I don't recommend you try to do that. All right, we got a lot of things to talk about. Tons of ground to cover. We're going to talk about health care. Democrats are kind of fighting each other over health care and costs. It's rather amusing to watch Democrats try to pretend, especially Bernie Sanders, try to pretend that he cares about the cost of things when he so casually throws around some of the biggest numbers ever written, spoken out of a human being's mouth. And what's her face? Kamala Harris. There it is. Brain freeze, brain fart. I'm tired. Kamala Harris tries desperately. She twists herself into a pretzel, trying to answer how she's going to pay for her health care plan. It's rather funny. It really is. We do have other things to get to, and I know you are like me, probably sick of hearing about the Gang of Four, the Suicide Squad, as I put it in my column today for Town Hall. But it's the news. It is the big news. The president went down to had a big rally last night, and the crowd started chanting, "Send her back, send her back." And it was, of course, uniformly met with pearl clutching across the country because the president was listing off a whole bunch of things about Ilhan Omar. He went through each one of the Gang of Four, gave each of them some of their due. But when it came to Ilhan Omar, the crowd started chanting, "Send her back." This was declared to be racist, horribly so, unacceptable. Don't you understand that it's just a hate crime to not denounce? It's not even that you agree with it. Doesn't matter if you agree with it or not. It's if you don't denounce it. And if you don't denounce it fervently enough, it is a new level of insanity from the left and from the Never Trumpers, quite frankly. They were out there. Look, do I think it's a good look? No. But do I care? No. I'm so sick of leftists having these double standards. 2 years, 3 years solid. Donald Trump is Hitler. Donald Trump is a monster. Donald Trump is a racist. Donald Trump is this. He's a rapist. He's robbing the country blind. He's only president to enrich himself. He's a puppet of Russia. He's this. He's that. You can say anything you want about the President of the United States, people associated with the President of the United States, the wife of the President of the United States, the children, including Barron of the President of the United States, and the media is absolutely 100% fine with it. Donald Trump responds, and all of Donald Trump's attacks are responses. I cannot find one single example of Donald Trump just throwing a dart at a board of people's pictures and going, "I'm going to go out and I'm going to attack this person today." He always attacks back. That doesn't matter. You can say whatever you want about him. If he responds, why, this is unacceptable. This is unprecedented. How dare they? He is so unpresidential. He's acting it's in an unprecedented fashion. Well, how many presidents of the past were openly called Hitler, not only by the fringe political opposite side of the spectrum, but by so-called respectable members of the media, by highly paid commentators, by editors and publishers of media outlets? How many of them have been? None is the proper answer. So if you want to talk about unprecedented, let's start there, shall we? Because if you're going to talk about a fight, you should talk about the first punch thrown, not the counterpunch landed. Yet that is exactly what the left wants to avoid and wants to pretend isn't happening. Why, Donald Trump is just a meanie racist, and he gets up and he decides to go after four women of color. Oh, God, not women of color. Donald Trump has no color, therefore he can't attack or criticize or even be skeptical of women of color. But women of color can call you a Nazi, and it's all well and good. No, I don't play that game here. I'm not interested in that game. And for the pearl-clutching conservatives who were upset and said, this isn't a good look on the President of the United States, no matter what you think of the situation, you're free to have your opinion. I just don't care anymore. If you're going to come after somebody, they're going to come back after you. The left has been playing this game forever. Somebody, I forget who it was opining on Twitter about, it was one of the blue check marks on the right saying, shouldn't we be better than this? Conservatives are supposed to be better than this. Yeah, we tried that. We tried that for a very long time. We tried to lead by example. How's that working out? Now you got to give them a dose of their own medicine. It's their own damn fault if they don't like it. It's a suppository. They're the ones who created it. So here you go. Donald Trump is cramming it right up where the sun doesn't shine, and they don't know what to do about it because they're in a bit of a conundrum. The Democrat membership in the House of Representatives doesn't really want to be associated with the Gang of Four. Yet, because of Donald Trump painting them as leaders of the Democratic Party and saying mean things about them, the Democratic leadership in the House of Representatives was forced to circle the wagons around. Am I allowed to say circle the wagons? I don't think I'm allowed to say circle the wagons. But they were forced to circle the wagons around them, therefore making the case, as Donald Trump has been doing, that they are more powerful than the Speaker of the House of Representatives. I don't know that the president planned it this way. Maybe he did. Maybe it is six-dimensional chess. Who the hell knows? I just know that that's kind of how it's worked out. So while the media has been clutching their pearls and engaging their fainting couches, and the backs of wrists are going to foreheads as everybody on the left feels faint, he's actually doing quite well. And personally, when I listen to the chants, I'm not going to play the clips for you. You've seen them or heard them by now, or you can find them pretty easily. As the crowd was beginning to chant, there's every reason in my mind to believe that that was not some sort of horrible racist thing, the way that the left is just painting it as horrible and racist because Ilhan Omar is a woman of color. She's the first Somali-American elected to Congress. She's the first Muslim woman elected to Congress. How can you say these horrible racist things? If you had said it about some white dude someplace, no big deal. If Democrats started screaming something horrible about Liz Cheney, like I'm sure many of them wake up from their night terrors screaming about Liz Cheney, it's no big deal. Hell, right there next to you would be Anderson Cooper and Don Lemon and... okay, maybe not them, well, it depends, but they would be no big deal. It wouldn't even warrant a mention, yet because Donald Trump said so. You know, if Donald Trump had said the same things about Nancy Pelosi, the argument would be that Donald Trump is a hate monger who hates women. It's just that they're able to add the women of color part of it. It doesn't matter who he's criticizing. They're always the victim because he can be nothing but a perp in the eyes of the left. But that chant, to my mind, and why I didn't care about it, was because it's a big middle finger to the last 72 hours of outrage, faux outrage, and nonstop declaration by so-called journalists that Trump's racist tweets were racist. The CNN Chiron across the screen on Monday said Trump denies racist tweets were racist. They've absolutely decided that it's racist. Now, what was racist about it was that he was being critical of women of color. It has nothing to do with their race, but it's everything about their race. Paul Ryan was just attacked by the president a week ago as a failure and a loser and a moron. It was the British ambassador to the United States before that, the former British ambassador to the United States before that, as a dumb person. Both of them are white or people of non-color. I guess I should use the liberal nomenclature. They're people of non-color. Yet Donald Trump went after them. Did he think that they were minorities? Did he think that they were people of color? Or was he hitting back at their criticisms of him? That's how he is. I think the American people understand that. The Democratic media is hoping that people don't understand that, which is why I think it bears repeating here. But should we go to the audio first? Let's go to the audio first, because we have a bunch of, not a bunch of audio. We have some audio. The gang sat down with CBS News. We played a little bit of the preview clips yesterday. And let's talk about sweet, sweet, nourishing Ilhan Omar, who never did nothing to nobody. Oh, we've got some information on Ilhan Omar. But the president, Gayle King asked Ilhan Omar about her past anti-Semitic comments, which are plentiful, her past tweet. Gayle's Oprah's friend. She didn't go into too many details. She didn't read any of her past tweets, she calling for the destruction of Israel or her associations with people who call for the destruction of Israel. She just basically went with one particular comment. Ilhan Omar has been admonished publicly by Democratic leadership over at least two comments in her first 6 months in the House of Representatives that were blatantly anti-Semitic. But again, Gayle can't be bothered. She's got a plane to catch. She's going to go hang with Oprah this weekend. But listen to Ilhan Omar's response. She is not regretting having said blatantly anti-Semitic things. And at the end of this clip, this is the really telling thing. She's not sorry about it, and she thinks that the real problem isn't with what she said. It's the way that people took what she said, because she claims she didn't mean it in an anti-Semitic way, even though she used anti-Semitic tropes, anti-Semitic stereotypes. She says that since she didn't mean it in an anti-Semitic way, it's not really anti-Semitism, so mind your own damn business and go about your way. Well, that's the exact opposite of what the Gang of Four is talking about and respond how they're responding to Donald Trump's tweet. He's just criticizing them, and they're saying he's doing it because we're women of color. And the words he used are offensive because we're women of color. You can't have it both ways. If you demand that your intent be accepted by the people that you're being critical of, in Ilhan Omar's case, Jews, then you must accept the stated intent of the person who has offended you as well, shouldn't you? I mean, unless you're a raging hypocrite. But of course, she's a progressive Democrat. Of course, she's a raging hypocrite. I've set it up enough. Let's listen to Ilhan Omar discuss her and dismiss her past anti-Semitism.
We also asked Congresswoman Ilhan Omar about her past comments suggesting some politician support for Israel is motivated by money. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle denounce those comments as anti-Semitic.
Oftentimes there are things that you might say might not hold weight for you, but to someone else, right? The way that we hear and consume information is very different than how the next person might.
So you don't regret your words either?
I do not, but I have gotten I am grateful for the opportunity to really learn how my words made people feel, and have taken every single opportunity I've gotten to make sure that people understood that I apologize for it. And
would you
never,
like people to? Would
I
you,
never
would you
really
like to
want
make it
them
clear
to,
that you were not anti-Semitic?
Oh, certainly not. Yes.
Would you like to make that clear?
Yes. I mean, and that nothing I said, at least to me, was meant for that purpose.
Nothing I said, at least to me, was meant for that purpose, meaning the purpose of anti-Semitism. So saying that the Jews control politicians with all that Jew money. Well, yeah, look, it's just a language thing. She's only been in the country since she's 12, and she's only 37. So you've got to be here for, what, 30 years for that to click in? So she's still got a few more years, a learning curve that she has to overcome. The president, of course, listed a whole bunch of things about her on the way or at his event, his rally down in the Carolinas, and it was kind of funny. And then the chants started sent her home. And oh no, you knew that all the programming at MSNBC and CNN was immediately wiped clean. They'd written it on a dry erase board. They're going to talk about this way how Trump sucks, that way how Trump sucks. And then they're like, nope, wipe it all clean. It's all going to be about the chanting, the chanting, the chanting, the chanting. Well, the president all... Well, no, I'm not going to play that clip. Maybe I'll play that clip in a bit. I want to talk to you about... This is, again, another level of absurdity. The Washington Post. Being the Washington Post, they decided to fact-check Donald Trump's attacks on Ilhan Omar. They have a piece written by one of their fact-checkers, this one named Salvador Rizzo. Sounds like a character in a really bad play, doesn't it? Sounds like a stereotype name. The headline Salvador Rizzo came up with is President Trump accuses Representative Omar of supporting Al-Qaeda. And then they go through a bunch of quotes from the thing, and then this is how it starts off. This is how their actual fact-checking starts. The president accused Representative Ilhan Omar of supporting the terrorist group behind the 9/11 attacks. Omar, a Somali American and practicing Muslim, was elected to Congress in 2018. She's a member of the Squad, an informal group of liberal Democrats. Yeah, that's what they are. Trump lashed out at the foursome on a Twitter statement Sunday, telling them to go back go back is the only part that is in quotes, because they leave out the part where he go fix country, then come back. Show us how you did it. Show us how wonderful your ideals are. Go and pose them someplace else. See how well that works out for you. Most racists don't say, and then come back. Come back. Come back in a couple of years. After you, then I'd be totally fine with it. But they never mention that. It's just go back to their countries. Asked about those racist comments the next day, because it's racist, you know. If you say that to somebody who is off-white, then you're a racist. If you say it to somebody who is white, you're not racist. But everybody has to be treated equally. You should always treat everybody as an equal. It's just that some people, especially women of color, if they're leftists, are more equal than others. Throughout, this is an exceedingly long piece. I don't know if Salvador got any sleep last night, but he's very, very upset. It says Trump's accusations, however, is that Omar sympathizes with al-Qaeda terrorists. It's one thing to criticize U.S. policies and institutions, as Omar does. It's entirely another thing to voice support for al-Qaeda. We found no evidence for this claim. They didn't really look very hard about Omar's sympathies for terrorists. A quick internet search, just one of the, aside from the fact that she says, my professor says Al-Qaeda and gets all tense, and it says Hezbollah and gets all tense, but he doesn't say America and get all tense or the army and get all tense, basically equating them. Look, if you want to talk about terrorist organizations, let's talk about the U.S. military. No, that was brushed off in the so-called fact check. And her comments about some people did something in the attacks on 9/11, the Washington Post actually had their fact checker write that you needed to watch the entire 20-minute speech in order to understand the context of that comment, and therefore it's not really all that bad. They wrote, as we found in this fact check, a full look at her 20-minute speech adds necessary context. Oh, okay, it's necessary context. Yet you can quote two words from a Trump tweet storm and declare that he's a racist from it, and then base all of your coverage for the ensuing 4 days on just that declaration that you decided off of two words in a multiple tweet storm. Because you only ever see go back in quotes. You don't see the rest of the tweet. You don't see the rest of the thread. You don't get any context whatsoever. It's just Orange Man bad. Orange Man bad. But they want you, when it comes to Ilhan Omar, to watch the full 20 minutes of it. Because, some people did something, has some good context. Of course, they don't really provide the context in the Washington Post. That would be too much like work, and it would be too hard to do since there really isn't any good context when you say that CARE was founded after 9/11 because some people did something and all Muslims were going to be attacked because of it. Because implicit in that is that the United States, again, is a horribly racist country and also hates Muslims. And the more context, the broader context you give her comments on some people did something on 9/11, the worse it actually looks, the worse it becomes. So they don't want to give you that context. They just want to declare, hey, you need more context. Trust me on this. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. But since the Washington Post fact checker couldn't be bothered to do a simple internet search to find out whether or not Ilhan Omar has ever done or said anything, just say sympathetic to people involved in terrorism, I did. This story from Fox 9 up in Minneapolis. Headline, Representative Ilhan Omar asked judge for compassion in ISIS recruit sentencing. Isn't that nice? The headline just sounds lovely. This is when she was a state representative up in Minnesota, yet she was elected anyway because of identity politics. The story starts, the nine Minnesota men charged with planning to join ISIS are scheduled to be sentenced next week. Ahead of those court dates, 13 letters were sent to Judge Michael Davis in the case of defendant Ibrahim Yassin Daoud, D-A-U-D. I don't know. It's the best I'm going to do with the pronunciation. Including a letter from State Representative Ilhan Omar, who on election night became the first elected Somali-American lawmaker in the nation. Again, you see how many qualifiers they have to do? They love firsts. First elected Somali-American lawmaker. There were other Muslim women, but it doesn't matter. Representative Omar asked Judge Davis for, quote, compassion and a, quote, restorative approach to justice, end quote, concluding that, quote, and this is all from her letter, this ruling can set a precedent that the potential to be and has the potential to be a landmark case in addressing extremism. She's asking for leniency for guys who tried to sneak off to join ISIS to fight the United States. And she wants leniency for that because it's, you know, you can have some compassion. You can address extremism through compassion. Yeah, we can hug our way out of this. Daoud was one of two young men from the Twin Cities arrested in San Diego in April 2015 in an alleged plot to buy fake passports for travel to Syria. Federal prosecutors requested 30 years in prison for Daoud with a lifetime of supervised release. Isn't that lovely? Doesn't he sound like somebody you'd want to rally to the defense of? But thanks to identity politics, Ilhan Omar is almost, in a Pavlovian sense, compelled to sympathize, empathize, and to care about, they're both Somalis. They're both Somali Americans. That's all. That's all that matters. There you go. The 13 letters sent to Judge Davis on behalf of Daoud include similar pleas for leniency from Minneapolis City Council member Abdi Warsaim, a Minneapolis public school dean of public students, several youth program coordinators, and Daoud's own mother and brother. Warsami's brief letter said that Daoud is, quote, a young man who has a future ahead of him, end quote. Yeah, it probably wouldn't have been that long if he'd have gotten his way. The defense has pushed judge for lighter sentences. This is what cracks me up, because these are the people that Ilhan Omar was supporting, saying that the young immigrant men were caught between two worlds, the United States and pride in their Somali heritage. And that's exactly what Ilhan Omar has, pride in her Somali heritage. It reminds me of the Hondurans we see marching up in conga lines from Honduras through Mexico, fleeing their country in desperation and fear for their lives, or so we're led to believe, while carrying the Honduran flag. Why do you have pride in the country you're fleeing? Does that not occur to you as a bit weird? Does to me. Ilhan Omar had to flee Somalia and live in a refugee camp for 4 years. I wouldn't be super proud of that if I had to flee a country that I was a citizen of. I wouldn't really sort of embrace the culture. And she's never let it go. And her argument, and the defense's argument here, was that they were caught between two worlds. One where they weren't facing death squads and warlords either recruiting them, trying to recruit them or kill them, and one where they were. And it's just it's a coin toss. It could go either way. When that's your defense, it is it's not much of a defense. The defense argued that the young men were lured by propaganda on the internet that suggested that a true Muslim should be in Syria saving other Muslims who are being killed and trying to restore the caliphate, not mentioning all the, you know, Muslims being killed by ISIS within the caliphate because they were deemed to be not Muslim enough. But don't worry, it's the United States. That's horribly racist and discriminatory. By the way, just as a follow-up, that letter didn't have the desired effect that Ilhan Omar desperately wanted. The guy got 30 years in prison. He's 22 years old when he was sentenced in 2015. So hopefully he never sees the light of day, but if he does, he'll be a much older man, and screw him. He tried to join a terrorist organization and kill innocent people. Ilhan Omar may defend him, may forgive him, may idolize him, may identify with him. I, on the other hand, your humble correspondent, do not. I'm funny that way, I guess. Now, I want to get off the squad as quickly as possible here, but there is something I have to read you that is relevant to this from Jake Tapper, of all places. And this, of course, is illustrative of just how terrorized the Democratic Party's rank and file members are by these four monsters, these four little monsters. The Gang of Four sort of administered the Cultural Revolution, oversaw it, kept people in line, and this Gang of Four wants to do the same thing. Jake Tapper, in a tweet storm yesterday, I'm just going to read them to you pretty quickly because there's a lot of other things I want to talk about, but this is the news of the day, people. I don't make the news. I just report on it. Jake Tapper tweeted yesterday, House Democrats appeared unified in their votes this week, but I've spent the day talking to a bunch of them, and many are extremely frustrated. All agree POTUS's tweets needed to be condemned. They spoke under condition of anonymity so they could be candid. President, quote, the president won this one, said House Dem number one. He doesn't give any of their names. Of the Trump versus squad quote, showdown, quote, what the president has done is politically brilliant. Pelosi was trying to marginalize these folks, and the president has now identified the entire party with them. Another issue, what are Dems focused on? Is it what will help the class of 2018, largely moderates, other than the squad, get reelected? Dem rep number two said, quote, the president's words and actions speak for themselves. We need to focus on the issues that got them here. Jobs, health care, instead of the issues the president brings up deliberately. Anything that takes away from the bread and butter issues is playing into his hands, end quote. Other Democrats are conflicted about having to defend the squad, given the things they've said and done. House Democrats cited talk of supporting challengers to incumbent Dems in primaries, AOC's use of the term concentration camps, anti-Semitic comments by Tlaib and Omar. That's all true. Democrats behind the scenes hate it, but they're terrified to speak out against it because these people will unleash holy hell on social media and try, they're perfectly willing to destroy their own party members to maintain power. Remember all the commie purges? This perceived selective outrage rankled some Dems. Quote, everybody was completely outraged by what the president said, said House Dem number three, and everybody thought it was appropriate to criticize him. But this was the first time the House has taken action to criticize him in any way. We couldn't even bring ourselves to have a resolution exclusively condemning anti-Semitism uttered by one of those members, meaning Ilhan Omar. But we leapt to their defense here. A few House Democrats noted that Omar and Tlaib just introduced a resolution affirming the right of Americans to boycott, perceived as an expression of support for the anti-Israeli BDS movement, the Boycott, Divest, and Sanction movement, that most House Dems oppose. Quote again, Dem number three. So we'll hear a tirade of attacks on Israel from the same group. Hopefully they won't be anti-Semitic. Democrats are crossing their fingers, waiting for the next anti-Semitic trope to come flying out of the mouths of these bigots. House Dem number four also brought up that bill coming, quote, from someone with a history of anti-Semitism. So yeah, it's challenging. House Dem four recalls that, quote, less than 2 weeks ago, when members of our caucus were trying to support funds for children at the border, the squad was arguing that we're we're pro putting kids in cages. We're against human rights. So there's frustration," end quote. Others noted that this week the House Democratic Caucus stood by a group that is not perceived as standing by them. This is Dem number three again, quoting Jake Tapper. Quote, "I can tell you that the number of members who are angry and annoyed by them, criticizing us." AOC, end quote. AOC in particular, quote, "gives her chief of staff license to get candidates to run against her colleagues and to go after them on social media. It makes people's skin crawl," end quote, said House Dem number three. House Dem number four summed it up, quote, "We were there for them. They should stop attacking us," end quote. They can't stop attacking them. This circular firing squad, this dropping grenades into your own trench, is who they are. They're Tasmanian devils. They don't care what they do or what they destroy. They want their way, and they want it their way now. And anything short of them getting their way is an affront to women of color. That's how insane this is. Anyway, that's enough about this. Oh, by the way, no, there's one more last thing about the squad. AOC tweeted about how criticizing her or calling her, this is so stupid, about how calling women of color communists is, of course, you guessed it, secret code for racism, for white supremacy. You cannot make this stuff up. These people are beyond parody. She tweeted, quote, "Calling people who believe in democracy, civil and economic rights, and racial justice communists has a long and rich history." This woman is nuts, and she's also illiterate. "Long and rich history with white supremacy in the United States. It was one of the preferred smears against integrating schools and one of the main attacks segregationists used against MLK Jr." So, it's a tactic of the left, right? Smearing people as you can probably replace communist as white supremacist, and that's the Democratic Party's playbook. She's nuts. She's absolutely nuts. Enough about them, though. I do want to move on. Damn it, I didn't mean on spending or intend to spend that much time on them. But I just want to play you this clip from Donnie Deutsch. He's just a freaking nut job. He's a host on MSNBC on the weekends that nobody watches, and they have him on during the week to try and get their audience to tune in on Saturday nights because, 5 days a week of having absolute idiocy spewed into your head isn't enough. You got to have it on Saturday as well. I want you to listen to the way this guy, he wants to address you, Whitey. Hey, Whitey, listen up.
Power.
You know, enough is enough, and I want to talk to the white people out there, okay? I want to talk to wealthy white people because I've had it. I've had discussions when I talk to friends, people I know. It's good for the economy, but it's good for the economy. They're all jerks anyway. No. No, it's time. By the way, if you're somebody who's poor and you believe Donald Trump is going to get you a job, maybe you don't have the luxury of a moral imperative, okay? But everybody else, shame on you at this point. Enough. This is where you stand up. And if you don't, you own it. And I talked about this yesterday. You are no different than if you were on a subway train and you saw four white nationalists screaming and an African-American woman, go home, go back where you came from. If you vote for Trump, it's like you're going like this and own it. No more he's good for the economy. No more, well, they're all jerks. He just says these things. We are heading to such a dangerous. And guess what? You look at history, it can happen here. Maybe it's the Jews next. Oh, I forgot. His daughter's married to a Jew. Who says? You know, and I come from a group of people where it happened to, 6 million of them. And I'm not saying Trump is that person, but every playbook that's happening, every single playbook, creating the other, getting rich people to look the other way, getting people to not trust the press, getting the judicial system in your pocket, getting an entire branch of government, the legislative branch, the Republicans, to just march with you, to act above the law, to say that you're going to put your adversaries in jail. What else do we, and now, Hey, you dark person, if you don't like it here, go back from where you came. Okay. Boy, it's time for us and time for white people who maybe it's not so great for your pocketbook. Go in and look at your children and decide who you are.
Cracker ass cracker. Cracker ass cracker. I'll put my foot in the cracker ass. Cracker ass cracker.
Listen, Whitey, it's time for you to just shut up and do my bidding. Don't you understand who I am? These people are absolutely nuts. He's trying to divide. He's with the other. He's using the other. Says the party that divides everybody by their race, by their gender, by their religion. Donald Trump, if he's one thing, it is uniform. It doesn't matter what color you are, what flavor of human being you are. If you come after him, he's coming after you. He's going to hit you back. Unless you're Eminem. Remember when there was a big story about Eminem wrote this big diss rap about Donald Trump, and Donald Trump never said anything about it because Eminem was desperately trying to get some publicity. So he can show restraint when he wants to, but otherwise it doesn't matter. Paul Ryan, maybe Paul Ryan is secretly a woman of color. I don't know. I don't know Paul Ryan, so I can't say. Who knows how he identifies? But poor Donnie Deutsch right there, saying that, you know what, basically there's another Holocaust coming. I'm not saying it's going to be the Jews. It could be somebody else. Who knows? Remember when comparing somebody to Hitler was beyond the pale and unacceptable in political conversations? When making Holocaust analogies was unacceptable in political conversations? Now, it's unacceptable to not make them. You have to make them. It is watching a woke off. They are trying to one up each other. Meanwhile, they'll tell you Donald Trump's rhetoric is going to lead to violence. Donald Trump's rhetoric is threatening the lives of members of Congress and especially women of color all around the fruited plain. Yet, meanwhile, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's evocation of the Holocaust in calling the detention centers on the southern border concentration camps actually inspired an attempted act of terrorism over the weekend, and that might as well have not happened. It might as well have not happened in the eyes of MSNBC and CNN. It doesn't matter. He used her words in his manifesto. But it's Donald Trump words that could inspire. Okay, I'll cede to you that you really believe and care. And the caring part is the important part, but they don't believe it either. And care that the president's words might, could, maybe inspire somebody to do something. I'll believe that you believe that and you care about that proposition when you take a look at what someone's words actually did, when someone's words, somebody you like's words, actually did inspire an act of terror. Then I'll know you're serious. When you condemn AOC for calling and spreading this garbage that we're running concentration camps on the southern border, then that led to a terrorist attack. Direct link right there in his manifesto. Then I'll believe that you believe and that you care that Donald Trump's words could inspire something awful to happen, especially to women of color. Until then, I'm going to think you're full of post-digested dinner. Because that's really what you are. Speaking of being full of post-digested dinner, Kamala Harris is out there trying to sell her health care for all plan. She can't really decide if she wants to get rid of private health insurance or allow people to keep their private health insurance. She's not really good on specifics. She doesn't really have many answers. Well, she was asked for kind of an important specific. I get that you don't know the nuts and bolts of your plan, but how you plan on paying for it is kind of an important detail. You would think somebody out there trying to sell a piece of legislation to the American public as part of the reason to nominate them for your party's presidential candidate, you'd think you might have the basics down on that. But no, she's swearing that she can fund her Medicare for All plan without raising taxes on the middle class. The reporter here ain't buying it, to their credit. I believe it's a CBS News reporter. I could be wrong about that. It's irrelevant. But I want you to listen to this exchange, and you can feel the squirm. You can feel the discomfort, and you can feel the BS slowly creeping up your calf to getting to around your knee. And by the end of it, it's at your mid-thigh. It is hilarious.
Not in favor of a middle-class tax hike.
Yes, correct.
How do you propose to pay for your version of Medicare for All, if it resembles what Senator Sanders
is
proposing?
Part of it is going to have to be about Wall Street paying more. It's going to have to be about looking at how we and what we tax in terms of financial services. That's part of it. But the other part of it is to understand that this is about an investment, which will reap a great return on the investment. We can't only look at this issue in terms of cost without thinking about benefit. The benefit to the American public will be that people will have access to health care that right now they cannot afford. And we are all paying a price for that.
Well, we aren't exactly paying $40 trillion for that, but she can't explain it. She's dodging. It's funny. It continues.
Well, Senator Sanders says that that is impossible to achieve without a middle-class tax hike.
I'm not prepared to engage in a middle-class tax hike.
But in many studies, study after study shows it would cost approximately $30 billion over a decade to pay for this. So taxing Wall Street will reap $30 trillion in order to cover this?
What we're doing right now is unaffordable to so many American families. And the idea that we're going to go down and this level of analysis that suggests that status quo is okay is completely unacceptable.
You can feel the squirm. Some people can't afford stuff, so don't talk to me about costs. We have to do something. This is the same argument for Obamacare. There are 15 million people, 15 to 30 million people who don't have insurance. Therefore, the government must seize the insurance market for 300 million people and change it all to benefit this tiny fraction, rather than just addressing that tiny fraction, because what they really wanted was the power. They really wanted to seize the entire healthcare industry, so they just used that as cover. It's the same logic behind gun control. Some random person did something horrible, therefore your rights must be infringed. Some people can't afford their health care, therefore your health care's got to go. What are you going to do? It's got to be changed for the greater good. If there's another word, and I hate to use this term because I'll be considered a racist because Kamala Harris is a woman of color. But if there's a better word for it than communism, I don't know what it is.
So people who have private insurance would eventually have to give that up under your plan?
They would eventually be covered under Medicare for All, and they would still see their doctor. And that's what they want.
How long would this transition take?
The transition is going to have to take, the bill is 4 years. I think it's going to have to take more than that, maybe, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And all of this done without a middle-class tax hike?
Without a middle-class tax hike, yes.
$30 trillion. Over 10 years.
There are ways to pay for it, also understanding the investment that we are going to be making in a way that is going to reap great benefits in terms of other costs.
The investment where?
In American health and what we are otherwise paying as a cost for people not having access to health care and the burdens that places on systems across the board when people don't have access to health care.
And when people question that there is no formula for this, that you are going to find money in magical ways, is not realistic thinking. How do you respond to that?
The status quo is not enough. So we have to be open to challenging status quo so that everyone has access to health care and price is not the barrier. We have to agree that what's happening right now is not affordable to many, many working families.
She's lying. She has no answer. Your taxes will have to go up. There isn't enough money in existence to pay for this crap. It's not just me. Because while she's trying to seem like a very serious candidate, you notice she never gives specifics. She always says, we need to have a conversation about that. I'd like to have a conversation. It's something definitely I'd be interested in looking at. That's her specifics. That's as far as she goes. Well, upon hearing that, an advisor, a top campaign advisor. I can't remember his name. I don't know what his name is. It's irrelevant. He is one top aide to Bernie Sanders. He was on MSNBC talking to Haley Jackson about this very thing. And he summed it up beautifully, what you just heard right there. At least Bernie's honest. At least Bernie, he's going to jack up your taxes. He claims that you're going to save a bunch of money because you're not going to be paying premiums for your employer-provided coverage. But those premiums, you're paying a percentage of those premiums. You're not paying the full freight on those premiums. So that's kind of important. You're going to be paying the full freight for this one on taxes. But listen to this Bernie advisor just destroy Kamala Harris's statement you just heard there.
But what I'm saying is there a way, as Senator Harris seems to think there is, to do this without actually, you know, people who are middle-class Americans making them pay more?
I mean, without unicorns, magic wands, healthcare is not free. It's like there's doctors, nurses have to be paid. There's hospitals. You have to pay for it. People will be paying less under Medicare for All than they're paying now. And that's the point.
So you think Senator Harris's plan is not realistic?
I do not know how you fund healthcare for everybody in America without paying for it. You have to pay for it.
Unless you got unicorns and magic wands, you're going to have to raise tax. Bernie gets credit for being honest. The rest of the Democratic field isn't being honest with you. They'll tell you that they can just tax the rich and pay for, you know, everybody's student loans, everybody's college, everybody's health care, everybody's housing, everybody's cell phone, everybody's food, anything you ever want. We're going to clothe everybody. It's going to be the most just society everywhere. Plus, you're going to be able to provide government jobs for everybody who wants them, and it doesn't cost you anything. Anybody really believe that? Again, kudos to Bernie Sanders for just flat out saying, yeah, of course I'm going to raise your taxes. He's at least honest. He's trying to tell you, he's partially honest. He's trying to tell you that the savings are going to be through the roof, though, because you're not going to be paying your premiums. Well, if you're paying 25% of your premiums, but 100% of the cost of socialized medicine through taxes after you get that 25% of your premiums to you, you're paying more. You're paying a lot more. Your employer isn't going to suddenly go, all right, well, I've been paying $25,000 a year for your health insurance, but now that I don't have to do that, here's $25,000 a year raise for you. That's very unlikely to happen, because the other operating expenses of the business will go up. The employer is going to have to pay for their own health care. Their taxes are going to go up. Corporate taxes are going to go up. All that money is going to be filtering through government. So you've got to prepare yourself for writing a bigger, fatter check for Uncle Sam. But don't worry, you're going to love it. And if you don't love it, tough. You're stuck in it forever and ever and ever, because the government will be the only game in town and the private insurance industry will collapse. It took a long time to set up the private insurance industry and cut the deals with the hospitals and the doctors and the coverages and everything. Once you destroy that, once you disappear that by the government taking over, it doesn't come back in the snap of a finger. It won't come back very easily and likely will never come back at all, even if the American people want it. Because what company is going to say, well, all right, we're going to throw billions of dollars into setting up this market, knowing full well that there's a political party out there that is ready to destroy it again and will be ready to destroy it again at a moment's notice. Bernie himself appeared at an event at the Washington Post yesterday talking about his Medicare for All plan. I want to play this very short clip for you. Bernie's answer is very, very short, and it is just casual. He throws around this ridiculous amount of money about what his plan and what Medicare for All is going to cost everybody. And he just, you imagine him sitting back in a hammock talking about it's going to be, you know, it's going to be $5 to go see this movie. How much is the movie going to cost? $5, $10, something like that. No big deal, no big shake. Except he's talking about trillions. It's easy for Bernie to talk about it in these terms because it's A, not his trillions, and B, he's pretty old. So when the feces meets the fan, he's likely not going to be around to really feel the splatter. But listen to the casual nature and the amount of money Bernie's talking about his plan costing.
If you're elected president of the United States, you're going to have to go to Capitol Hill and sell this. Vice President Biden said his plan would cost $750 billion over 10 years. If you're talking to a lawmaker, January 2021, and they say, Senator, give me a number, Medicare for all, an approximate number, how much would it cost?
Somewhere between 30 and 40 trillion over a 10-year period.
He's, somewhere between 30 and 40 trillion dollars. Somewhere. There's a huge, $1 trillion is a gigantic amount of money. And his window for what his plan is going to cost is, somewhere, it's a $10 trillion window. What's $10 trillion amongst friends, after all, I ask you? It's just so casually, what are you going to do? I don't know. It's going to be something. 30 to $40 trillion. Whatever. Somewhere in there. We'll figure. You're trying to seize the health insurance market for the entire country, therefore controlling all access to health care for every single American at a time when we are approaching $23 trillion in debt. You're talking about spending an additional $30 to $40 trillion over the course of 10 years, just the first 10 years. And of course, cost estimates are always low, always low. And decimating the industry that exists and takes care of 90% of the American public already. And you just casually say, $30 to $40 trillion, somewhere in there. Shouldn't you have some kind of specifics? If it was, $30 to $40, I get that, you don't know what it could be. It could be 35, but plus tax, depending on the sales tax in the city or state you're talking about, it could get up to $40. But when you have a $10 trillion window, and you can't get more specific than that, you can't do any better than that, Bernie. Of course, he doesn't care. It's about control. It's not about the money. You do whatever it is to be get the control. This is about seizing your life, essentially, and literally your life, and holding on to that power. The cost is irrelevant. They can always control costs, by the way, by rationing access to care. Suddenly, this utopia you were promised where everybody gets everything they want, all they got to do is go see any doctor they want at any given time, show up at the house, the doctor's got to take care of you, it doesn't matter. Suddenly, you realize that, wait a second. So now I have to wait 6 months to get an MRI? Now I have to wait 9 months to get a hip replacement or shoulder surgery? Is that how it's going to be? Pretty much, yeah. These people just throwing around money, doesn't even care. I want to just point out lastly today, two things. There was a New York Times story the other day about how the 75th anniversary or the 50th anniversary of the moon landing is coming up. And now the New York Times is, of course, marking this with the typical wokeness. The headline, "To make it to the moon, women have to escape Earth's gender bias." The subheadline, "The Apollo program was designed by men for men, but NASA can learn from its failures as it aims to send women to the moon and beyond." Well, Ralph Cramden already offered to send women to the moon, and now you can't show reruns of The Honeymooners because it's a hate crime because of that joke. I'd be all in favor of this ridiculous gender bias crap. All those evil men sent somebody to the moon. I'd be happy to send women to the moon as long as I get to pick the women. Let me pick the women. I'll pay to send them to the moon. I'll bust my ass to send them to the moon. And instead of sending them to the moon, Democrats are going to be congregating in Wisconsin next year for their party's convention. I don't know if I'm going to go or not. That remains to be seen if somebody's going to pay for that. I just love this story from the Wall Street Journal because it's almost as if they didn't plan for this. The story in the Wall Street Journal, next summer's Democratic convention is expected to have roughly 50,000 attendees in a metropolitan area with fewer than 18,000 rooms. You read that math right. You heard it right. 50,000 people going to go to the convention. There's going to be a lot of media. There's going to be a lot of delegates, a lot of lobbyists and hangers on and suckers up and all that stuff and politicians, every politician. 50,000 people estimated to go. A lot of people. If you've ever been to a convention, they're huge. And the metro area, not just the city itself, but within an hour of the convention center in downtown Milwaukee, has only 18,000 hotel rooms. So just for the hell of it, I went to Travelocity and to see if I could find a hotel room anywhere in Wisconsin that during the convention, and they're not. They're none. They're not available. You can't find them. The Airbnb prices are in the thousands of dollars. These champions of the poor are going to pay tens of thousands of dollars for Airbnbs, or of course, I assume all the hotels jacked up their rates as well. It is going to be an absolute fecal matter show. I love every second of it. I'm at least looking forward to watching it on television at a bare minimum. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Tomorrow on the program, Carrie Severino and Molly Hemingway talk about it's the number one Amazon seller of the week, Justice on Trial. It's a great interview, if I do say so myself. Plus, we'll update you on the news of the day. I'll be on WMAL in Washington, D.C. from 3 to 6 today, tomorrow and Monday, if you want to listen live. And email me, Derek@dailycaller.com, if you want to enter to win the signed Kayleigh McEnany books, so on and so forth, complaints, compliments, all those sorts of things to that same email address. If you listened on ricochet.com, they apparently fixed whatever the problem was that the last few days' shows weren't playing. It's just, you know, one step forward, two steps back. Anyway, thank you for listening. Have a great day. Tomorrow is Friday.
But I want to talk to the white people out there, okay? I want to talk to wealthy white people because I've had it.